Good evening, this is Gary Kavanagh here on the right side. I'm here today with my friend and colleague, Michael Dwyer. Today is Wednesday, the 12th of February. I hope that all is well with you and yours. I'm trying a new personal touch on the openings, Michael.
It's lovely and warm. I like it a lot.
We've got to push the development of a parasocial relationship where they think we're their friends.
Parasocial? Is that like the Paralympics?
No, it's very, very different.
Okay.
Absolutely different. Although it's still a great time for all, as I think we'll all agree the Paralympics are. Unless the people competing were crippled during their life, in which case that probably wasn't great for them. But moving swiftly on.
Okay.
The polls are finished, Michael.
The count is done, and the 37 men and women of the apocalypse, the 37 riders of the apocalypse, are on their way to Leinster House as we speak.
Yep, the 37 Sinn Féin candidates are in. 38 Finnish Fall candidates are in, so they just lost out on being the biggest party in the country by one seat. However, to be fair, one of those seats the Fianna Fáil have was given to them automatically. They didn't actually have to win the election to get it. So if we're looking at purely seats that people actually stood for and you could vote for, they actually about won the same amount.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because they had the Cian Chéile.
Yeah, but I think the Cian Chéile is not counted in the results. I think the results were 38-37 plus one. I think it's actually Fianna Fáil come home with 39 seats.
I don't believe so. That would be an exceptionally odd way to do it, considering that if you go down on, let's say, the RTE website of candidates, Sean is the first candidate listed.
Yeah.
Under Fianna Fáil.
Sean Arden. Yeah. But
anyway, I think you're wrong.
That's not the first time that's happened.
No, but I'm usually correct when I say it, so I'll keep saying it.
Well, again, that's not the first time you said that either. So
Fianna Fáil 38, Sinn Féin 37, Fine Gael 35, Labour 6, Solidarity, People Before Profit, or Sol PBP, which I never use because every time it happens, I feel the in my mind it rearranges to Sol BBQ. I wish it isn't even a thing, Michael.
BBQ? Barbecue?
Yes, a solitude barbecue.
Yeah.
Green Party on 12, Social Democrats on 6, Into on 1, Independence on 19, and others with one seat. So that is the lay of the land. The real question now is, what do we bloody well do with this mess?
Indeed. Indeed.
So, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael at the minute are doing the whole, okay, the people say they want a left government. Well, let Sinn Féin go to everyone else and see if they can put together a left government. On the very clear knowledge that that would be an absolute disaster and you would have a dozen or half dozen parties in it and, you know, 19 independents, 20 independents, and it would be a absolute nightmare.
What is the total number of the left, if you add them all up, leaving out the independents.
Leaving out the independents and counting Into, which many people wouldn't do because a lot of the left-wing parties see them as fascists.
Yes.
Even though I know Patter and he is deeply left-wing to the extent he and I agree on nothing.
Yes.
Actually, let's take Patter out just on that basis. Yeah. You'd have 66.
66.
If you took Sinn Féin, Labour, Sol PBP, GP, Social Democrats. And you would have another 21 independents and a Into, which would give you a majority of 7.
Yeah, you're not obviously going to do that because there's going to be a bunch of those independents that are going to be incompatible with life. It would be difficult. It would be challenging, to say the least.
It would be. And some of the left-wing parties, even though beforehand they were like, yeah, Sinn Féin get in, left government, that's all great. Now they're making noises that make it sound like maybe they don't want to be in a Sinn Féin government. And I think that might be because of their self-interest, Michael.
How so? Explain.
So let's say you are one of the Solidarity or People for Profit, one of the 5 candidates, they got over the line.
Yes.
You got there, most of them, largely, purely based on Sinn Féin transfers.
That is correct.
if there is another election and Sinn Féin run two candidates, you will not have a seat.
Yes.
They know that the sort of government that would be created, assuming you could even get it over the line,
yeah,
would last about 2 months and then collapse. And then all of their people will lose their seats. But a Fianna Fáil Sinn Féin government, that could last a couple of years. And that could get a little bit of money to those people. And I'd say they're aware of that.
Yeah. Right now, Breach Smith. Is Breach Smith people before profit?
Breach Smith is people before profit.
I think you were looking at her numbers. She starts off with 4,500 first preferences. The transfer she gets after Aegis Nothing surplus is distributed is almost as big as bigger than her first preference vote.
Yeah, she gets 11% of first preferences and gets elected on the second count.
Second count, which is, you know.
Because Angus got 39.3% of first preferences.
God, yeah, numbers are genuinely off the wall stuff.
So this is a problem that they have. And that Labour have, and that the Social Democrats have, and that the Green Party have, although possibly Labour to a much less extent.
Yeah.
They get another election in 2 months. Mm. Sinn Féin is going to take them. Assuming Sinn Féin goes in at roughly the same level they do on this, which is a big assumption.
You see, right now, I would say, you're looking at a situation where, you're right, for the transfer left thing seems to have happened. It eventuated. We were looking there at Donegal, where Pat the Cope Gallagher lost his seat. And Pringle, against, I think, a lot of people's expectations, held on. And the principal reason is that when Pearse O'Doherty goes out, now both Sinn Féin candidates get over the quota, but Pearse goes out, Pringle gets something like 2,800 transfers. So that vote, Sinn Féin vote, transferred heavily to the left. So it's in their interest not to have... No, in Donegal, would Sinn Féin run three? You never know. They might do. They got 45% of the first preferences, you know. That's usually in and around the place where you run three candidates to get three seats. So the other left-wing parties could see themselves just being mopped up like gravy on the plate by the last bit of bread that by Sinn Féin. So it's in their interests to maybe push Finn Fall into government. Fine Gael, I think you're in quite a comfortable position. They can perfectly reasonably say, we've been in government, we have been rejected, we don't have a mandate, people have voted for change, we are going to go into opposition. And I think that maybe they may be enjoying the prospect of being liberated in opposition and being a little bit more authentic, a bit more true to themselves, insofar as they know what that is.
I talked to a couple of the Fine Gael people who managed to get re-elected, and I've never seen people so happy to be going into opposition.
I was talking to one guy, and he said, I feel like a burden has been taken off me. The prospect of being in opposition and just being able to I didn't press on what he was referring to particularly here, but he said, not having to defend the kind of shit we've had to deal with, the stuff we've had to put up with, is just fantastic. Pure relief. But the problem is for Fianna Fáil. Fianna Fáil, it seems to me, is in that place between the rock and the hard.
So, I mean, this is the thing. The small left parties have an incentive to actually get Sinn Féin to go in with someone, because that keeps them going for a while. And also, they know that even if Sinn Féin was able to make a government out of them, it'll be gone in 2 months. So even from a purely ideological point of view, you're better to get Sinn Féin in and then have a bit of influence over a couple of years. Fine Gael, they want to go into opposition. They know what they should do. Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil, though, they have a little bit more of a difficult thing. And I would say particularly Fianna Fáil. Because if you're Sinn Féin, I'd say what Sinn Féin want to do is they are going to have a lot of pressure internally to have another election immediately.
Yeah.
And run a load of candidates. I say there's also going to be people in the party, kind of more strategic thinking, who say, oh, no, well, what about a couple of months in government with Fianna Fáil? Just to show people that the country doesn't collapse when we get in.
Yeah.
And to say we've sat in government. And then we'll bring it down. There will be something we can do. We'll say it's health, we'll say it's housing. We are not going to have to search hard. to find a reason to bring it down and look like it wasn't our fault.
Yeah.
That's just the reality of it. But Fianna Fáil, what do Fianna Fáil do?
Yeah, you see, I was talking to a couple about that. The question I was asking them was, we've seen two very different types of music coming out. Micheál Martin and a couple of others have been making noises that we have to be open to everybody, that people have spoken, we will see what can be done, blah, 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 right? So that previously hard line about not going in with Sinn Féin is very much softened. On the other hand, then we've other voices coming out like Jim O'Callaghan saying that we can't have Sinn Féin in government. Sinn Féin in government would turn the country into Venezuela. If that did happen, I would not serve in that government. I would sit on the back benches. Pretty hard line for a guy who was fairly well respected in the parliamentary party, and as just a spokesman in a Fianna Fáil Sinn Féin coalition, would pretty certainly be Minister for Justice. So I said, well, is this just, you know, establishing a scenario as a negotiating position? And two things came that I thought were interesting. First one was that, the thing is, when the polls were looking were better for us, the prospect was that Fianna Fáil would be up around 55, maybe even 60 seats. Sinn Féin would be down in the 20s somewhere. So that Fianna Fáil would very definitely be the biggest party. They would be they would have the whip at hand, and they would be able to manage the scenarios. Now, it's a completely different situation. You're looking at a situation. There's no reason why Sinn Féin wouldn't ask for a rotating premiership, like they've had at times in Germany. The capacity for Fianna Fáil to be able to manage that government would be much less. But also, that there is growing within the party, in parliamentary party, people who are just against it for philosophical reasons, but also just for their belief that it would be lethal for Fianna Fáil to go in with them. But also, I'm hearing across the country that grassroots, the activists, the organisers, are ringing people up, they're emailing, they're writing in and saying, we did not vote for you to go in with Sinn Féin. We do not want to be in government with Sinn Féin. But what do you do? Where is the government going to be Where is the government going to be formed?
Because you could stay out of government and Sinn Féin try and put together their left government, or at least look like they're trying to put it together, yeah, while actually making sure it will never function, which would be the smart thing to do, because you don't want it to function. You don't want it to ever actually happen.
Yeah.
Because it would be a disaster. And then another election happens and Sinn Féin stands up and says, they said we were undemocratic, but they refuse to recognise the will of 24% of the population when they received less between them.
Yeah.
Or less.
Individually, yeah, yeah.
And if you want actual change, you are going to have to vote for Sinn Féin. All the left-wing people will have to get behind Sinn Féin for change. Or we'll just get, this time, a Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael government again.
Yeah.
And is that helpful to Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil? So if we have another election and Sinn Féin takes 45 seats,
yeah,
they'll form a government.
I don't know. I can't imagine that this is not going to see a long process of negotiation. Off the top of your head, can you remember how long it took for the last government to form?
I think it was 59 days.
Something like that. It was a couple of months, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to imagine that this isn't going to take a couple of months. Unless it just doesn't happen, and it becomes clear after a month that it's just not going to happen. And at that stage, what happens? Leo goes back to the park? And says, I can't form a government. And Michael D says, invites somebody else in to form a government, and they say they can't. And then he calls another election. I don't know what the particulars are in that situation. But you're ultimately facing into another election. I suppose if you're going to be optimistic for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and it's just game, is it possible that having made a thorough mess of dealing with Sinn Féin up to now, that they might have learned something about how to fight a campaign against them?
I mean, it's certainly theoretically possible that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil could learn something.
Theoretically.
Not just about Sinn Féin, just in general.
Yeah. But you look at the numbers and you have to think, if you go back in a couple of months, if nothing else, they're going to take some of those solidarity votes, seats, they're going to take a couple of... there must be 7, 8, 9 seats that they're going to mop up.
Here's the other thing. Yeah, they'll take those seats. I would be worried about some of the Fianna Fáil seats, though.
I was going through them. I don't think Fianna Fáil actually picked up very few seats at the end that they might otherwise have been in a position to take because of the Sinn Féin transfers, and they ended up losing out. I don't know how. Okay, this is assuming Fianna Fáil could maintain their first preference vote where it is. But if they were to replicate it, I don't think they're.
Oh no, I'm not talking about transfers. I'm talking about Sinn Féin actually taking from their first preference.
Oh yeah, well yeah. In that case, sure. Then
because if this is people wanting a change, and Sinn Féin can present Fianna Fáil as actively working to stop that change.
Yeah,
I don't know. Of course, their support could entirely collapse if they're unable to form a government, and people could think this was a ridiculous, childish thing we did, and. It took them less than 12 hours before one of their elected representatives was recorded shouting, "Up the rah," and "We've broken the Free State bastards."
Yeah.
Sorry, no, "We've broken the bastards, we've broken the Free State."
Yeah, I that's not helpful. I have a feeling that you don't think that that's going to matter a great deal to a lot of the voters.
I don't think it will. I think some of the more middle-class areas will take it as an issue. And other people. It's like with Boris Johnson or Trump. You price in certain things.
Yes.
So I think at the point where you have voted for Sinn Féin, a lot of people are like, yeah, that's what Sinn Féin are like.
I think that one of the problems here also is the political landscape is really confused. And I think that there are parties floating around in places where they shouldn't be, or people think they are, but they're not. And I'll give you what I thought was a really interesting detail from the exit polling, right?
Mm.
The question was, if the next government has resources to spare, should more money be used to reduce taxes, or should the money be used to increase spending on public services, right?
Yes, I saw the question.
And I think it's interesting that the party that had the lowest response to increase public services at 57% was Sinn Féin. The highest response for cutting taxes was 43%, and that was Sinn Féin. 43% of Sinn Féin voters said they should use the money to reduce taxes.
Now, that would indicate to me, considering that by the exit polling, more Sinn Féin voters think we should cut taxes than Fine Gael voters.
And considerably more than Fianna Fáil voters.
That something has gone a little bit wrong for Fine Gael.
Yes. But also, it speaks to that thing that I heard you talk about 3 years ago, and we've talked about here before, which is the gap between the Sinn Féin voter and the Sinn Féin, shall we say, official party.
Hmm.
Now, it seems to me that when you have that kind of gap, if we want to use a sporting analogy, if you're on a field and you leave a gap open like that, that leaves a chance for somebody to get through that gap and score. There must be an event. If you can speak to those voters in a way that they find compelling. Also, it means that it's a problem for Fine Gael. It's a kind of a problem for Sinn Féin. Now, having said that, you could also argue that Sinn Féin was the only party that actually ran on a tax-cutting manifesto.
Well, I mean, Fine Gael got 2 weeks into a 4-week election cycle and then suddenly went, "Have we mentioned we want to cut taxes?"
Yeah.
And you sort of go, lads, this should have come up sometime in the last 9 years.
Like, Sinn Féin were on...
now it's just not really believable.
Sinn Féin were what? They wanted to abolish the universal service charge, property tax, and lower taxes, was it, or increase the bands? There was an income tax proposal there as well. So they were actually looking at tax. But the figure that I found more than the cut, that only 57%. Now, the perception of the, I would say, the perception of the Sinn Féin voter is that they're the kind of people that are going to be using government services. They're going to be using public health, public education, transport, all these things, and are therefore going to be enthusiastic. And yet, only 57%. Want more spending on government services. I thought that was really interesting. But as you say, there is, it's an indication something has gone wrong somewhere.
I mean, I think the from seeing the full polls, I think we can take two things. One, the Dublin strategy that Martin pushed for Fianna Fáil has been a dismal failure.
Yes.
Only 16% of support in Dublin City. Martin turned the party away from its older voters in order to reach out to those people, and he's failed to do so. Now, had it worked, it would have been, you know, a necessary modernisation of the party. He would have led Fianna Fáil to glorious rebirth. And instead, it looks like he just lost votes.
Fact is, if you look at that number, I would suggest that if Fianna Fáil, and I'm not saying they should have done this, but if Fianna Fáil had just gone into Dublin and said, we are social conservatives, boo to all the progressive stuff, there's 16%, you get 16% of the vote anyway. Even in Dublin, there's more than 16% of the Dublin voter who's a social conservative.
And I think I think that was a dismal failure. I think the other thing to take is that Fine Gael may not have been, I'm not sure if it was harmed by its move on, by its focus on social issues, although I know a lot of people, and I tend to agree with them, who think that Fine Gael focused on social issues and social referendums to cover up their lack of movement on other areas.
Yeah.
And it was basically, oh God, the health service, quick, throw a referendum.
Yeah.
But they, while they may not have been punished, we'd have to go into the vote details at much greater details to see that, it doesn't look like they received any reward for taking the stances on social issues they did. So they lost conservative voters, and they didn't replace them with progressive voters.
Yeah.
And I think that is, and this has been a debate that's been going on inside Fine Gael for years about whether or not this would actually work. And my point, and I think now we can say it was probably correct, is if you were a socially progressive voter, and that is the thing you vote on, regardless of how much Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil help you, you will never switch to them as your primary party because you have better options. You have parties that won't go 80% of the way and then have other positions you disagree with. You have the alphabet soups, you have the social democrats, you have those people who will go 100% of the way on whatever social issue it is and don't have any of the baggage that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have.
Okay, I think both you and I know people in Dublin, in Fine Gael and in Fianna Fáil, who are cosmopolitan social liberals, and they are as progressive as you like. But they are not the classic, they do not fit into the classic descriptors of what the social progressive in Dublin looks like. The social progressive, if you were to take a poll and you were to get all of the indicators, all of the predictors together, that along with the positions that they have on as being social progressives, there are other things that come with that. Issues about care, issues about public transport, about climate change, about green policies, education, that doesn't put them, say, on the liberal wing of the Tory party. They are not socially liberal conservatives. There are people in South Dublin, in Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, who are socially liberal conservatives, but there are not that many of them. And the great bulk of these people are simply, I would say that the old-fashioned, the older ones, are classically Labour voters. I don't know when the election was, but it was the election in the 2000s, when they were looking at the boxes that came out where people from Aylesbury Road would have been voting, that Labour was the number one party in those areas. Labour in large parts of Dublin became the party of the socially liberal upper middle classes, in the way that Fine Gael in the 80s would have been. Now, then you go to the rest of Dublin, the socialists, the Social Democrats, the Greens, all of these parties are going to offer other things, other areas that excite those voters in a way that neither Fine Gael nor Fianna Fáil are going to do.
I mean, I did hear some of the Fine Gael guys, who was it, Tom Cotton, was it?
Yeah.
On radio, and the basic gist I got from it.
Tom Curran.
Tom Cotton, I think, is an American football player. But I hear Tom Curran on talking about it. And the general gist of his thing seemed to be that, well, the issue for Fine Gael was that we weren't enough. We weren't progressive enough. We weren't these things enough. I'm not sure if Tom Curran actually believes that, or if he realises that if that direction is deemed to have been a bad choice, fixing that bad choice will probably mean fixing Tom Curran. And he would rather have a situation where he is not
fixed,
quietly taken behind a woodshed and shot.
Yeah, I think that's reason. I don't know what Fine Gael would look like if it was more socially progressive. Because, yes, most of the population in the country is in Dublin, and that's where most of the seats are. But there are large swathes of the country where Fine Gael also takes seats, where an even more socially progressive Fine Gael, I think, would have presented a serious challenge to Fine Gael to taking seats in Cork South West or in Galway West or in Mayo or in Cavan Monaghan or wherever it was. I mean, look at Wexford. In the end, they lose the seat. Darcy, and they essentially, you could say, they don't lose it to Mytham. I think you could argue maybe Fianna Fáil's would. If anything, they lose it to Verona Murphy.
Which is creating a stick to beat your own back.
I don't think that's an example of where Fine Gael was not socially progressive enough, that they went to vote, they went over to Verona Murphy instead. No, I think that's missing the point. You know, it's possible, or it could be possible. We've never tried it in Ireland, really. Fianna Fáil looked like they might be about to try it. A party where you can have people who agree, more or less, on the economy, on organising the transport, about industrial policy, about spatial planning, all of these things. But when it comes to these hot-button social issues, like whether it's gender or marriage or abortion or whatever, that people are allowed to have an opinion, and they're allowed to disagree, and disagree in public, and debate, but that's just that thing. That's the thing but that's not what the party is about. Now, we could try that. Not that, you know, it might be refreshing. Other countries, they do that. But we're not, so far anyway, we're not, it doesn't seem like we're willing to try it here. Anyway, Fine Gael are where they are, and I think they're being forced back into a more traditional understanding of Fine Gael. But Fine Gael are a centre-right party. That's how they've always seen themselves. Fine Gael is trickier. They've never seen themselves as being a party really of the right. Whatever the Irish media would have described them. That's never how they saw themselves.
So we, this is sort of a train wreck of incentives of different parties.
Okay, here's a question for you. Let's throw it at you. What is the purpose of a political party? Is a political party simply a political business whose job is only to identify, to look at the market, see where they can get votes, irrespective of what they have to do to get those votes? Or do parties have other... Is there something else going on in being a political party? Is it a more complicated thing than simply a business?
I'm not a big fan of metaphors, Michael.
No, it's not a metaphor. Not a metaphor at all. It's a straight thing. Is there a part of a political party which is supposed to lead, or are they simply supposed to follow? Because I think that what's happening at the moment is that parties in Ireland don't have, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, in a sense, outside of the social issues. And I don't even think they're leading there. I think they're actually following. They don't seem to have any sense that they can do something and try and persuade and make an argument for it. There's nobody making, people talk about the market, right? But that's all they do. They say, we'll have to help. Have you heard anybody in Fine Gael, or let alone Fianna Fáil, make a robust argument in any area of policy to say, we really need to let the market get in here and sort this problem out?
No, no.
And I would say, if you look at American politics, British politics, Italian politics, German, that there are politicians who will actually go out there and make an argument and try and say to people, listen, there is a way to do this. And this is how you can do it. And this is what happened in the past, and this is how we can do in the future. To actually make an argument, to try and not simply be passive reactors. Do you not get the feeling a lot of what's going on in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael is as a response, a passive following response to polling and to focus grouping?
I mean, pretty much. I think Micheál Martin, actually, to be honest, I think a large part of the problem that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have currently is that both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael decided to move in a particular direction at about the same time, and it's the same destination. So under Martin and Leo, those parties have started to converge very rapidly on policy positions, and it has exacerbated the situation where people feel that they are effectively the same party.
Yeah, except between 1987 and 2007, I would challenge anybody to tell me the difference between the economic policy of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Maybe in 1987 to 1989 it was slightly different, because Fianna Fáil was more aggressive. Ray McSharry was doing things that other politicians were just not willing to do. And Charlie Haughey had a degree of imagination and vision which other politicians didn't have. But after that, the 90s, I mean, Rory Quinn, was a Labour Minister for Finance, 94 to 97, could have been in Fianna Fáil, could have been in Fine Gael. The fact that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are converging on policy areas, I don't think is new. Maybe what's new is that they're actually converging on social policy. And that is the one area where historically they'd kept apart. In the 80s and the 90s, they'd been distinguished by their position on social policy.
They're also doing it at a time where their prevailing differences, which were mostly cultural, are seen as less and less important.
True.
So internally, you still have people who will say that the parties are incredibly different, and the culture is quite different.
Yes.
But if you're outside the party, that doesn't matter to you, assuming that you even know it's a thing, which, I mean, members of the public are not good on public policy, so they're almost certainly not going to be aware of the internal cultural differences of political parties.
Process. They know less and care less about process. So, we are where we are. Where do we go, Gary?
Fianna Fáil could go in with Sinn Féin, and it could work out well for them if they handled it correctly and they contained Sinn Féin.
Yeah.
And they got it over the line, because remember, that needs to go back to the membership.
Yeah.
And this is a membership vote that Martin can't ignore.
So,
it could theoretically work out for them. It would work out for the left-wing parties. It would work out for Fine Gael. Fine Gael, I think, need time to find themselves, like a middle-aged woman at a spiritual conference.
Can Leo survive?
The narrative's already been pushed out that Fine Gael avoided a disastrous election. I saw Harry McGee in the Times today. I think that will stand up for about a week, maybe two. And then there will be a realisation that if you ignore the exit polls, the end result was pretty much what the polling suggested it was going to be.
I agree.
Leo could survive. I think a better question, if you were involved in Fine Gael, is should Leo survive?
Yeah, I think you're right. I said when these came out in our last podcast that my sense was for the first week or so, the fact that Fine Gael did so badly would be enough to make them feel like they had done well. But by the time we get into the second week, they'll start to go, they'll realise, actually, hold on. We got 20.9% of the vote and we lost 13 seats. That's a shit result. This is not what was supposed to happen. Leo doesn't give any sense of wanting to go so far.
To be fair, Leo has not appeared at all since this result. I mean, I haven't seen anything from him. And when I've been talking, weirdly enough, actually, because I've been talking a lot to different Fine Gaelers and different Fianna Fáilers, trying to get a sense of like what they think is happening, no one, not a single Fine Gaeler, has brought up Leo without being prompted. Unless it was in the context of a leadership contest.
Was it Paddy Coffey, the ex-Fine Gael TD in Waterford, came out and said that Leo should be replaced? And we got a rather nice smackdown from John Paul Phelan.
It was a nice, as is John Paul Phelan's way, it was nicely polite. Yes. What was it? Retired politicians should remain retired.
Should stay retired. Yeah, it was nicely done. It wasn't too vicious, but it was a good slap. But other than that, there hasn't been a whole lot. But yes, your question is, should he? You know what? Talking to people, bad result for Fine Gael, sure, but talking to people who are not Fine Gael voters, I got the feeling that the last bit of the campaign, they actually didn't think that Leo was that bad.
No, the problem there is that it looks like they were fairly heavily punished for health and housing.
Yes.
Leo's failing there is not removing whatever about Owen Murphy, Simon Harris.
Yes.
That is something Leo chose not to do. that is something that contributed heavily to devastating his party. So even if he is individually popular, he has made poor choices which have damaged Fine Gael.
Yes.
And it's a question of, you know, can he fix those choices? Now, some of the people the Fine Gaelers are talking about in the leadership contest are basically, we'll do what we did under Leo, but this time it's someone different. And some are legitimately different. But there may be no leadership contest. He may get through perfectly well. Also, it's Fine Gael, so they don't have the old Fine Fáil thing of, Fine Fáil, you open the drawer and the knives are just right there. And you're sort of constantly just playing with the drawer. Whereas Fine Gael seems to be a sort of, well, I mean, you know, we'll have to see what everyone says.
Yeah, I know. I know there's that reputation, but again, I would say historically, when it came to it, Garrett was pretty ruthless about knifing Cosgrave. Garrett, you know, Jukes was done pretty well by Bruton. I don't know. I think there was, but talking of ex-leaders, it seems to me one of the things that the next leader of Fine Gael is going to have to do is he's going to have to do the same thing that Enda Kenny did after the 2002 election. Everybody I talked to in Fine Gael that is saying that one of the things that's happened in the last few years is that the local structures and organisations of the party have been now it's a difficult time for parties to be organised.
Absolutely.
It's a hard thing. But that they have been ignored, they've been left to wither, and that's a problem. You're going to need somebody, the kind of politician who's able to go around the country, who can and engage with the local parties, enthuse them, energise them, and get them to start to rebuild those organisations. I'm not sure that Leo is the man to do that.
I don't think he is. I think that is the problem for Fine Gael, because when you look at the three highest people in Fine Gael, Leo, Simon Coveney, Pascal.
Yes.
Leo cannot do it. It's not what he is good at.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, yes, you could believe in this sort of redemption arc, but the man has now a proven history over several years of making bad decision after bad decision and not even realising they're bad decisions.
Making bad decisions and sticking to them.
Sticking to them and being surprised when they go bad.
Yeah.
So you keep him around and you have to hope that's changed. Simon Coveney, I think, had he been selected when it was him or Leo, things would have gone a different way. But what we saw over the election campaign is it was clear Fine Gael was struggling. It was clear Leo was struggling.
Yeah.
And that, I think, would have been the time for Simon Coveney to step forward and step into that and take a bit more of a prominent national role, basically just to help Leo out.
That was the time for him to come into his own.
Yeah, to steady the ship, to be, you know, the loyal captain. And then afterwards would have been able to go, you know, I tried and it, you know, if you put me there, I can do this.
Yeah.
And instead, I didn't see him the entire campaign.
Yeah, there's a sense that he disappeared wherever he went.
I mean, maybe he went back to his own constituency, maybe he went wherever. I can't hold that against the man because I'm sure it was a difficult race, although he did a lot better than some of his peers. But at the same time, he has had an opportunity where he could have stepped forward, even though he was not formally leader, and shown that he was capable of leading Fine Gael, and he didn't take it.
Yeah.
And the problem I have with that is if you are rebuilding the branch structures, if you're going to a period in opposition, you're going to really need someone who can just do it. You don't want someone who might react to a situation in the right way, might not, and you're not going to know about it. And so I think Coveney, whatever about having been a good choice before, is no longer suitable. Pascal, good guy, smart guy. I don't think Fine Gael's problem, I don't think their primary problem or what they should primarily focus on for the next while is detailed policy structures of the type that Pascal specialises in. I think this is a time for someone who is interested in process and rebuilding the party.
I think policy will be important, but I think it'll be broad stroke policy. It'll be music policy. It'll be about positioning themselves as the party of aspiration, the party of tax cuts, the party of prudence, but not detailed stuff.
I think what Fine Gael needs is someone to stand up but a copy of the 2011 manifesto and just go, this is what we are.
Yeah.
It's what we should have been, and it's what we failed to be, and that is why we lost. And we are going to become this again, and we are going to rebuild, and we will take back power.
They should have the ambition to become, right now, because they have the chance, where they are located, the natural alternative, the natural party of power.
The problem I think they'll have is that, and I know they don't like hearing this, because many of them don't believe it, the Fine Gael government has been so inept at governance that they're going to have quite a reputation to shake off. And that's why I think they want someone, definitely not in the top three, maybe a minister, maybe a backbencher, but someone who has a bit of distance from what was just not good years.
You're saying somebody's not tainted by association. But they're going to have to be at the same time somebody who has the experience and somebody who's deep in the party,
yeah.
Who understands the party, understands the membership, the structures of the party, and can work on that, who knows that really well.
I mean, that could be a really interesting leadership debate if someone goes ahead, because the kind of people who are like that are oftentimes people who aren't terribly public-facing.
No.
They're people who are known in the party and know how to go to people, motivate them, get them to build up. But they're oftentimes not. Like, they either don't care or they've just never been in that position. But then again, Leo may just stay. Now, Fianna Fáil has somewhat of the opposite problem in that, like, there are people just lining up to take that job.
Yeah, whether or not they represent what you would historically consider to be the quality of to do it.
I think Fianna Fáil have several people. We were discussing beforehand about some of the names that are being thrown around, and like there are four or five people I can think of who would be of a tier where they could be probably quite good leaders by most metrics.
Yeah.
And Fianna Fáil, I think, is in a slightly different place than Fine Gael. They need a different style of leader. And maybe that could be Martin. Maybe he isn't too damaged. I will say that from how many of his people who are strongly aligned with him, lost their seats, he may have a bit of a problem, particularly the loss of Lisa Chambers. I think that's personally embarrassing for Martin.
Yeah.
She's known to be someone who Martin considered to be a protege, was grooming to be a future leader of Fianna Fáil, and then she not only loses her seats, but there's all those issues in her constituency beforehand with the Fine Gael councillor, and it just gets messy. And
I think that's a damaging thing. But I think fundamentally the problem is Micheál has been disappointing. When he came in as leader, the fact is, if you looked at the Dáil, most reasonable observers would have said that Micheál was one of the last big beasts.
Mm.
He was a big beast in the old Fianna Fáil government, in the party. He was a superb debater. He was an excellent television performer. He was a heavyweight. And he hasn't been. From my perspective, he has been consistently disappointing.
Do you remember you and I, before the election, we were talking about the leaders' debate?
Yes.
And how careful Martin would have to be, Leo would have to be about Martin.
Yes.
Because Martin is an excellent debater. And then it got to the debate, and Martin just came apart.
Really?
And then you have things like signing pledges without reading them.
Yeah.
And then being unable to explain. And it's just messy.
Like, when Leo threw the thing about the manifesto, the Women's Council sort of manifesto, he made a face and did this a wave away gesture. I've explained that. But he hadn't. And it wasn't that it was a big thing. You know, in itself, it wasn't. It was a stupid thing, the kind of thing that happens, but it's the kind of thing shouldn't happen, really, in a well-organized campaign. How that
typos,
got, you know,
typos in the manifesto.
Yeah.
In how many fucking houses you will build when that is a major part of your thing. Like, that's not making a mistake on, you know, what you'll give to horse racing. Although you wouldn't want to make a mistake on that because those people pay attention to that. Like, you don't want to mess with the horse racing people.
They do.
But you know housing is a major component of your manifesto, and you have a typo in it that instead of 200,000 houses, you say you'll build 250. That's not a small mistake.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, the other issue that Martin now has with this whole Sinn Féin thing is this is the thing that Martin has always been worst at. Giving Martin a choice where there are many possible outcomes and then going, okay, Martin, which one do you want to take?
Yeah.
And he's not going to have time to commission a dozen reports on this.
And he will go back to his advisors. It always amuses me more. There's always that tendency with parties anyway. It's a bit like in the old days with the Tsar. The peasants would say, oh, if the Tsar knew what they were doing, he wouldn't do this. He's just surrounded by evil advisors. This has been a constant theme. Right back to, oh, God. I mean, several years ago, not long after, there was a constant complaints about who his advisors were and who was advising him. They weren't really in Fianna Fáil and what direction they were going. But he does seem to have, or at least there's a perception, which is a problem for him. Because politics is, a lot of the time, about the perception that he relies unusually heavily for a Fianna Fáil leader on the advice of his advisors. Not to rehash it, but if we go back, Cowan, Ahern, Reynolds, Haughey, you always had the sense that ultimately they made up their mind. They had a certain idea and that was what was going to go through it. Advisors were fine for the detail, but the principal stuff, they made the decision. Michal seems to be much more, shall we say, consensus orientated. And if he can't get a consensus, then that's a problem. And you're not going to get a consensus on this. There won't be a consensus in the party about this, in the parliamentary party or in the party in the country. There's going to be a lot of disagreements, and he'll have to make, ultimately, if he's left as leader, he's going to have to make up his mind.
So it'll be interesting times.
It will.
I think a second election sometime this year is the most likely outcome right now, but
yeah,
many things could happen.
The one person I'd say that we're fairly sure of that will not be leader is, say, Brendan Howlan.
I think Labour needs a change in direction, yeah. And I think it's also very clear that Brendan Howlan is not. To be frank, it looks like Brendan Howlan is the slow death of the Labour Party. Alan Kelly, what Alan Kelly will try and do may not work, but he is at least going to roll the dice and you have the chance of it working. Where Howlan is just...
Alan Kelly, yeah. At least he has energy. He has it. Yeah. Brendan Howlan, who I have a lot of respect for as a politician, again, I was surprised at how passive he has been as the leader. Maybe this is the hand he felt there wasn't much to do. I mean, do we see ultimately yet another? I mean, why would the Social Democrats leave Labour just to go back into it?
I mean, yes, people are now talking about the Social Democrats going back in with Labour. It could happen.
If I was a Social Democrat, I'd be far more likely to say, well, Labour can join us if they want.
I mean, I can't imagine, let's say, Gary Gannon is going to be like, yeah, let's bring in Labour.
Yeah. What precisely the difference is between the two of them might struggle. But frankly, well, you could say that about other parties.
Well, it depends on which Social Democrats you're talking about, because there does seem to be a difference between Roisin Shortall and Catherine Murphy, and let's say Gannon and the other Social Democrats who've come on afterwards. They seem to be much more kind of culture warsy, identity politics, not just left-wing stuff, very much newer stuff. But then again, a lot of the younger Labour people are like that as well.
Not the parliamentary party, they are old Labour. Yes, indeed. As you see, it will be interesting. Well, it'll be interesting to some of the rest of the country will get horribly bored by it very quickly, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. And I have the great advantage that I am away to Vienna on Thursday. So I do not need to talk about this on Sunday. Or Monday, because I'll be gone then as well.
Well, that's a nice treat for you and a treat for Vienna too.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, Michael, you can do the show on your own and I will. I'll do the editing in Vienna.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Of course, of course. Well, it's time for you to grow up and be a real boy.
Yeah, I'm sure. Anyway, I look forward to the Mozart Kugeln that I'm sure you'll bring back for everybody, which is all anybody ever brings back from Austria for some reason. I think there must be a part of the airport in Austria the size of a football pitch which consists of nothing but boxes of Mozart Kugeln.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Michael, I never bring back gifts.
And that surprises me not at all. Anyway, we shall be back whenever we shall be back, which will be probably whenever you're back from Vienna. And we shall be discussing, I'm sure, all of the exciting developments that have happened in your time, in the time you've been away.
And until that point, auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen. Tschüss.